difficulties and sorrows. I have unburdened myself upon you and brought my grievances before you, O Allah. This is because I lean on you and I am inclined towards you. I tend towards no other. Imam al-Husayn alayhi salam, the master of martyrs, these are his words.
Every clean soul.
Imam al-Husayn's words to Amr bin Qais and his cousin. Will you two move away so that you will not hear any of my calls for help or notice my calamity? Anybody who hears our cry or notices our calamity and has not responded or helped us is indeed Allah's right to throw them into the fire upon their nose.
السلام عليك يا أبا عبد الله وعلى الأرواح التي حلت بفنائي عليك.
Dear audience, now let's listen to some parts of Ziyara An-Nahiya Al-Muqaddasa. Stay tuned.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. السلام على الحسين الذي سمحت نفسه بمهجته.
Peace be upon al-Husayn, who sacrificed himself up to the last drops of the blood of his heart.
As-salamu ala man ata'a Allah fi sirrihi wa alaniyatihi.
Peace be upon him who obeyed Allah secretly and openly.
As-salamu ala man ja'ala Allah shifaa fi turbatihi.
Peace be upon whom Allah placed a cure in the soul of his place of martyrdom.
As-salamu ala man al-ijabatu tahta qubbatih.
Peace be upon the one under whose dome answer to supplications is guaranteed.
As-salamu ala man al-a'immatu min dhurriyatih.
Peace be upon the one in whose descendants are the imams after him.
As-salamu ala ibn khatim al-anbiya. As-salamu ala ibn sayyid al-aghsiyaya.
Peace be upon the son of the seal of the prophets. Peace be upon the son of the chief of the executors.
As-salamu ala ibn Fatimah al-Zahra. As-salamu ala ibn Khadijah al-Kubra.
Peace be upon the son of Fatima, the radiant. Peace be upon the son of Khadijah, the great.
As-salamu ala ibn Sidrat al-Muntaha. As-salamu ala ibn Jannat al-Ma'wa. As-salamu ala ibn Zamzam wa Safa.
Peace be upon the son of the low tree in the outermost boundary of heaven. Peace be upon the son of the garden of refuge. Peace be upon the son of Zamzam and As-Safa.
As-salamu ala al-Murammali bid-Dima. السلام على المهتوك الخباء. السلام على خامس أصحاب أهل الكسايا.
Peace be upon him who was saturated in his blood. Peace be upon him whose tents were violated. Peace be upon the fifth of the people of the cloak.
Oh.
And now let's listen to Dr. Muhammad Reza Fakhr Rouhani.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim wa bi nasta'in. Sallallahu alayki wa abdillah. This is an episode of the program Dialogue. I'm Dr. Fakhr Rouhani explaining some aspects of Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam's movement. It was at the same station that is at Qasr Bani Muqatil within present-day Iraq that Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam encountered Amr ibn Qais and his cousin. Well, as Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam was on the way toward al-Kufa, and he wanted to collect as more information about the actual situation and context in al-Kufa, Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam inquired Amr ibn Qais al-Mushriqi and his cousin whether they had been there in order to help Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam or not. Then upon receiving the negative answer, Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam suggested them to move away from that place, I mean from that region. Then Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam indicated that nobody would reach felicity if he had received the news and the call of help of Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam but never helped him. From this indication we find that first of all, when an infallible Imam requests help, it's incumbent, it's essential and mandatory for everybody, I mean for all Muslims, to help the infallible Imam. And parenthetically, it must be indicated that even today, if we receive the call of help of the 12th infallible Imam al-Mahdi alayhi salam, it's mandatory for all of us, one by one, to help him. The same holds true. This is the rule, I mean, without any exception. However, Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam indicated to Amr ibn Qais and his cousin that whoever receives the call of help of Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam but never helps him, they would be thrown into the hellfire in the world hereafter. At the same time, we find that Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam intended to rescue people, and this act of Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam in order to rescue people was in several ways, either by attracting them to himself, and in this way, those who had joined him would have their sins wiped out and deleted from the profile, or by showing them to leave the battlefield scene and in order not to witness the battles and the military conflicts exerted on Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam. So we find that an infallible Imam is the Imam of helping people, the Imam of rescuing people from hardships and from that end. We hope to receive the graces and attention of Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam to get out of our calamities. Thank you very much for listening to this episode. Assalamu alaykum ya Aba Abdullah.
Assalamu alaykum ya Aba Abdullah.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, for listening to this episode of the program Dialogue. We hope that you remain under the auspicious grace of Imam Hussein today and always. عليك مني
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavet, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Said Pureza, London.
Rashan Saglam, Istanbul.
Sayed Amin Alemi, Kabul.
Shahanabad, Indian administered Kashmir.
Round the world with reporters.
Yemenis from all walks of life flocked to the street of Yemen's capital Sana'a to commemorate the third Imam of Shia Muslims, Imam Hussein. He was martyred on Ashura, the 10th day of the lunar month of Muharram.
We went out as Yemenis to commemorate the martyrdom of Imam Hussein, who inspired patience and steadfastness in us in the face of the forces of global arrogance. We are in a battle with thousands of people like Yazid, and even worse than him, including America and Israel. They attacked the Yemenis people and the Palestinian people. They are still killing our women and children. So this memory gives us hope that the values we learned from Imam Hussein will make us live generously and win at the end of the battle.
Imam Hussein, protesters said, is still alive because of his immortalized values and beliefs, which reject the oppression and corruption that Yemenis are currently experiencing. They further said Imam Hussein was the symbol of revolution and tenacity who motivated Yemenis to resist the Saudi-led attack on their country.
This day is very important to us as we consider Ashura part of our identity. We are with Imam Hussein with our souls. Ashura this year coincides with the battle with the Zionist enemy. So the nation will follow the path of Imam Hussein in his jihad until the liberation of all occupied lands, especially occupied Al-Quds. And Yemen has come a long way towards freedom and independence.
After refusing to pledge alliance to the tyrant of that day, Yazid, in 680 AD, Imam Hussein and 72 of his companions and family members were killed during the Battle of Karbala.
People, he believed that Yemen has become a modern-day Karbala with the Saudi-led coalition killing people, displacing civilians, and enforcing a siege on the country. People, he are confident that Yemen's fight against the enemy will ultimately lead to victory. Abdul Latif Roshali, Sana'a.
Like every other Muslim nation in the world, Afghans mark the 10-day mourning ceremonies for the martyrdom of Imam Hussein and his companions. Tasua, which falls on the 9th of Muharram and is devoted to Imam Hussein's half-brother, Abu Fazl al-Abbas, drew hundreds of mourners to one of Kabul's old shrines. Attendees listened to clerics' speeches regarding the Battle of Karbala and beat on their chests.
This year, we are marking Muharram rituals under the rule of the Islamic Emirate of Afghanistan. However, our processions are more crowded, passionate, and prosperous than previous ones. You know that Muharram is not only related to Shias, so we have our Sunni brothers taking part in ceremonies and services shoulder to shoulder with Shias.
We Afghan girls share the grief of Karbala tragedies with Zainab, Imam Ali's daughter. We are all sorrowful on this day and remember the suffering and bravery of our role model, Hazrat Zainab. Today, we live under the flag and our hijab shows that we are her firm followers.
On Ashura, Afghan Muslims shut their businesses and take a day off to pay tribute to Karbala martyrs. They say prayers and hold charity events. This year, despite security threats, they took part in mass mourning ceremonies alongside Taliban officials.
Today is the martyrdom anniversary of great and respected Islamic figure and grandson of the Prophet Muhammad. I offer my condolences to you and all Muslims. Undoubtedly, Imam Hussein sacrificed his life to save Islam. We, the people of Afghanistan, followed Imam Hussein's path through fighting against invasion, arrogance, and oppression. May Allah keep the love of Imam Hussein alive in the hearts of all of us.
Ashura is significantly important in Islamic calendar. Ashura and Imam Hussein's school of thought teach us freedom, bravery, resistance, and Islamic unity. This righteous path will last until doomsday. We Muslims globally are obliged to announce and spread the message of Ashura to all Muslim and non-Muslim people, especially youths.
The commemoration comes as Shia Afghans have been repeatedly targeted in places of worship and schools by terrorist groups, only because of their ethnicity and beliefs. On the 7th and 8th of Muharram this year, two bomb explosions killed and injured more than 30 Shia mourners. Afghanistan has witnessed different social and political changes over the course of centuries. Against the odds, Shia Muslims have been steadfast in remembering the Battle of Karbala and Imam Hussein's martyrdom. Rahmatullah Baghban, Kabul.
Hundreds of mourners marched through various streets wearing black and reciting elegies in honor of Imam Hussein. who, along with dozens of his household members and loyal companions, were martyred in Karbala in present-day Iraq.
The martyrs here said this is a time for sorrow and self-reflection when one commits himself completely to the mourning. They said the mourning and the reflection of the tragic events at Karbala are intended to connect to the suffering and martyrdom of Imam Hussein.
This very day, March 10th of Muharram, is the day of sadness, is the day of agony, is the day of shedding tears to all Muslims. And the reason is that in the field of Karbala, Imam Hussein was being mercilessly killed by Umayyad leaders.
The mourners also engaged in chest beating as the procession moved around the town in the hot tropical sun. The mourners said Ashura not only signifies intense grief for Imam Hussein, but is also a motivation for resistance against injustice in the world.
Imam Hussein has submitted his life entirely in order to save Islam. And that is what Malik Ibrahim Zakzaki Hafizahullah is calling for, that the entire Muslim and even non-Muslim, even Christian, let us gather together to fight oppressors, let humanity and then justice be in our nation.
Many of the mourners said they will continue the struggle to resist injustice because, as the well-known phrase goes, every day is Ashura and every land is Karbala. Danjuma Abdullahi Suleja.
Throngs of Londoners marching through the center of the British capital to commemorate Imam Hussein, the grandson of Prophet Muhammad, brutally murdered in the Battle of Karbala 1400 years ago. Similar processions in the rest of the UK and the world to mourn him and his 72 companions killed along with him, among them members of his family. Their crime, standing up to the tyrant of the time, the Caliph Yazid.
It was a tragic incident that happened many years ago, but the moral stand that Imam Hussein took has transcended time and space. Its reverberations felt through generations, and this is proof of it.
Many generations later, men, women, and children flagellate themselves to identify with the suffering of the Prophet's grandson, a man of morals who strived for social justice.
Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam represents all of the martyrs in all the world throughout human history and planetary geography.
For me, he represents justice, bravery, and sacrifice.
His story is an example to mankind. As he stood against oppression and injustices.
And it's not just the mourning that unites the people here. For them, the march is an annual chance to share the legacy of Imam Hussein beyond the borders of their countries of origin. Saeed Purza, London.
Mourners in Karachi commemorated the martyrdom anniversary of Imam Hussein's youngest child, who was not spared by the enemy forces.
The 6-month-old Ali Asghar, the youngest son of Imam Hussein, was martyred by the forces of Yazid, the Battle of Karbala, and Imam Hussein's sacrifices for righteousness and freedom are still a source of inspiration for Muslims around the world.
Mothers who brought their babies along paid tribute to Ali Asghar on the first Friday of the Islamic month of Muharram and mourned the 6-month-old son of Imam Hussein.
What had the 6-month-old done? We are out on the streets recalling the message of that innocent child of Imam Hussein, that we will always stand against the tyrant of the time. We will always stand shoulder to shoulder with the oppressed, no matter what.
Special eulogies and rituals were performed to commemorate the incident where Ali Asghar was killed with an arrow shot in his throat in the plains of the Iraqi city of Karbala.
We are commemorating the martyrdom anniversary of Ali Asghar, the youngest martyr of Karbala, who teaches us the lessons of readiness and sacrifice in the face of injustice and brutality.
Ali Asghar was martyred while he was in the arms of his father Imam Hussain, who was pleading for water to quench the thirst of his little baby. The grandson of Prophet Muhammad and his companion sacrificed their lives but refused to pledge allegiance to the unjust Umayyad Caliph Yazid. Muhammad Turi, Karachi.
Prayers, storytelling and tearful rhythmic chanting are all expected when Shia Muslims begin their annual Muharram commemorations across the globe. Shia Muslims mourn the first 10 days of the Islamic month of Muharram, remembrance of the martyrdom of the Prophet Muhammad's grandson Imam Hussein, who was unjustly slain by an oppressive tyrant some 1,400 years ago.
It isn't only in the East that you witness the mass commemoration of Imam Hussein's legacy, but also a growing community in the West, particularly of Shia Muslim converts, are benefiting tremendously from the story of Imam Hussein.
We spoke to one convert who explained to us why he felt Shia Islam was the ideal faith for him.
That's what I did like about the following of the Ahlul Bayt, because I could see in the condition of black people in the past, we suffered quite a lot. In the past, and when you look at the teachings of the Ahlul Bayt, it's there too, that they see people suffering and they didn't like it in their time. And similarly, when we reflect on Hussein and our lives today, we've got to think Hussein didn't like that we mistreated and not respected as a human being. So it's important that we emulate what he stood for.
Despite the growth, some community leaders feel more work is needed to be done to support new converts. Shia Muslims currently make up about 15% of the estimated 3 million Muslims in Britain, with well over 100 mosques across the nation. Ensuring Imam Hussein's memory is being shared like never before. Robert Carter, London.
The United Nations Special Rapporteur on the Occupied Palestinian Territories says these attacks are illegal and irresponsible. The Israeli regime, however, says they are a preemptive act of self-defense against a Palestinian resistance movement called Islamic Jihad. The occupation forces say the bombardments could last a week, promising more deaths.
As the bodies pile high in the Gaza Strip, emergency protests like this are being held against the Zionist regime's latest onslaught. The pain and anguish is palpable, and with people who have loved ones braving the bombings right now, silence is just not an option.
Two Islamic Jihad commanders have reportedly been killed so far, as have dozens of men, women and children. Palestinians living outside the territories can only pray their loved ones are spared.
Yes, I have three of sisters and I have my mother in Gaza Strip. I'm trying all the time to contact with them, but they told me everything is bad in Gaza Strip. We just scared. The children is very scared, crying all the time.
They don't know if they will live until, like, you know, night or not. They say, if we respond to your call, then you know we are fine. If we don't respond, you have to be scared and you have to call, like, you know, our relative and see if something happened to us.
The West's handling of the Palestinian crisis, juxtaposed with the support Ukraine is getting, has thrown into stark relief the lack of political will on the part of Western governments to heal this decades-old wound.
The Palestinian problem has been going on for decades, and yet it isn't told about in the main press. Our governments do not support it, neither the Tory party or Keir Starmer or any of them, not even Ed Davey. Then none of them of the Liberal Party support what is going on. Why? Because it's more important to sell arms and to have some sort of democracy, they call it, in the Middle East. But what I think is happening is they're using Israel to create tension in the world.
Leave the Ukrainian with no armament whatsoever, because any to give a gun to a Palestinian, he's a terrorist. But the Israelis can have all they like. And they are the victims.
The US has thrown its weight behind Israel, as has Britain. Both say Israel has a right to protect itself, but from what? More than 2 million Palestinians living in Gaza have no freedom of movement, sitting ducks for the Israeli occupation forces. In preparation for the attacks, Tel Aviv prevented fuel deliveries to the already impoverished enclave. As a result, hospitals that are only allowed 4 hours of electricity a day will soon be unable to cope. Bianca Rahimi, London.
Voices of grief and sorrow for Imam Hussein, the third Shia Imam, a man who lived 14 centuries ago, but continues to inspire Muslims. Every year during the first 10 days of the Muslim calendar month of Muharram, Iranians get together in large mourning processions to mark the anniversary of the martyrdom of Imam Hussein. He and his 72 companions were killed in 680 AD by the forces of the tyrannical ruler of the time, Yazid ibn Muawiyah, on the plains of the modern-day Iraqi city of Karbala.
After 14 centuries, we continue to love Imam Hussein, not only as our third Imam and the Prophet's grandson, but as the symbol of self-sacrifice and freedom-seeking.
Every year, we participate in the mourning rituals for Imam Hussein to keep his legacy alive. We dress in black, beat on our chests, and shed tears. The blazes of his love never die down in our hearts.
The ninth day of Muharram is called Tasua and is dedicated to Imam Hussein's half-brother, Abul Fazl al-Abbas, who fought alongside the Imam against the army of Yazid. Abul Fazl is highly revered among Muslims as a symbol of loyalty and chivalry.
Abul Fazl holds a special place in our hearts. In the Battle of Karbala, Imam Hussein and his household and their companions were denied access to Euphrates River to drink water, and it was Abul Fazl who fought a large group of the enemy's forces to get to the river, but on the way back, he was brutally killed by the forces of Yazid.
The Karbala tragedy was sparked after Imam Hussein refused to pay allegiance to Yazid, who was known as a corrupt ruler. These people say without the sacrifices of Imam Hussein, Islam as we know it could have been distorted by Yazid.
The reason Imam Hussein rose against Yazid was to tell his community that Yazid was not treading on the path of Islam. And by spilling the blood of Imam Hussein, who was the Prophet's son, Yazid revealed his anti-Muslim stance, and this ultimately led to the decline of his rule.
The climax of the Muharram rituals is the day of Ashura, which falls on the 10th day of the month. That's when large groups of Shia Muslims converge on Imam Hussein's shrine in the city of Karbala in Iraq to pay homage to him.
The event of Karbala is a heart-wrenching story that touches the heart of every listener. But these people say, aside from its tragic side, Imam Hussein's martyrdom is an endless source of lessons about freedom and resistance for all generations. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Scores of people were injured and many more were arrested after government forces attacked Muharram mourners in the Indian-controlled Kashmir's main city, Srinagar. Authorities had placed strict restrictions in the city and sealed the entry points with barbed wires to prevent Shia Muslims from participating in the traditional procession. On Saturday evening, authorities issued a statement upholding a ban on mourning processions in the city centre. Police and paramilitary forces were deployed in big numbers to maintain order. Mobile internet services were suspended in parts of Srinagar. However, some mourners defied restrictions and poured onto the streets at many places to mourn the martyrdom of Prophet Muhammad's grandson, Imam Hussein. The government forces swung into action and hit people with canes. A number of mourners were also detained.
3 decades on, the authorities continue to prevent Shia Muslims from holding traditional Muharram procession in the region's city center, citing security reasons. The people here argue if the government can allow Hindu processions and political rallies in the heart of the city, why not Muharram procession?
See, on one hand, we see the whole security mechanism, you know, they get activated when Hindu pilgrimages are granted permissions and security arrangements are being made. But on the other hand, we see when, you know, something related to Muslims is there, they don't grant permissions. We don't want security at the first place. We want permission so that we could carry out our religious activities.
unko haq hai.
Very recently, ruling BJP party held a political rally in the city center. If authorities can ensure security for that rally, why are our peaceful mourning processions banned? Why this discrimination?
Two major Muharram processions in the city center were banned by authorities following the outbreak of militancy in Kashmir in 1989. The authorities fear the processions could be taken advantage of by separatist groups to stoke anti-India sentiments and hence create security threats. The religious bodies, on the other hand, termed the ban as a brazen attack on their religious freedom.
Yes.
It is very unfortunate that the authorities are selectively banning religious activities of the majority population here, shutting down mosques and banning processions even as authorities claim the situation is improving in Kashmir. These days, annual Hindu pilgrimage is underway in Kashmir and all sorts of arrangements are being made to facilitate that. We strongly condemn discriminatory behavior of the government and hope that the good sense will prevail.
The religious bodies have also criticized the authorities for failing to make necessary arrangements, like ensuring availability of essential supplies. They say all promises and claims made by the authorities have fallen flat. Sidri Safi, Indian administered Kashmir.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Please log on to our website www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight.
Recently, Labour's Shadow Chancellor Rachel Reeves was at pains to explain that the British government has lost control of the economy, adding that as families and pensioners worry about how they're going to pay their bills, the Tory leadership candidates are touring the country announcing unworkable policies that will do nothing to help people get through this crisis. We now present you an article written by Reza Javadi, a PhD student in British Studies at the University of Tehran. The piece is titled, Truss vs. Sunak, Race for UK Leadership Heats Up Amid Looming Recession. Cutthroat race to number 10 Downing Street is in full swing, with two formidable figures and seasoned campaigners fighting it out for the coveted chair to replace Boris Johnson, who faced an unceremonious exit recently after a string of scandals rocked his government. Former British Chancellor of the Exchequer Rishi Sunak and Foreign Secretary Liz Truss are the remaining two candidates in the fray, among 11 Conservative MPs who submitted their bids for the British Premiership. Rishi Sunak, a 42-year-old, spearheaded the rebellion against Boris Johnson when he announced his resignation as Chancellor of the Exchequer in early July, saying the public expects the government to be conducted properly, competently and seriously. Born in southeast of England to Indian origin parents, Rishi Sunak, in his leadership campaign, has primarily focused on his family's immigrant roots in order to win the favour of his party and people. He has also pledged to implement the controversial Rwanda policy, which is an attempt by the British government to repatriate asylum seekers in the country to Rwanda, 4,000 miles away. The underdog in the race is opposed to cutting taxes and has said that he would wait for the inflation to subside before going on a tax-cutting spree. Interestingly, it was revealed earlier this year that his billionaire heiress wife had avoided millions of pounds in taxes, which prompted many to seek his resignation. Rishi Sunak, who was involved in the infamous Partygate scandal and fined by police for breaching the government's own COVID-19 protocol, has the shadow of many scandals that brought down Boris Johnson hovering over him. Thus, his popularity in the Conservative Party is profoundly influenced by his records in the cabinet. Liz Truss, a 46-year-old whose dogmatism may not help her in navigating the challenges of being at the helm, has pledged to slash $36 billion in taxes to be paid for through borrowing. According to a YouGov opinion poll for the Times newspaper carried out from 29th of July to 2nd of August, Liz Truss had the support of 60% of Conservative members versus 26% for Rishi Sunak. While the remainder of the nearly 1,000 members polled either were undecided or not planning to vote. Considering all of the existing factors, Liz Truss appears to have a slight edge over Rishi Sunak. Liz Truss, who was chosen by Boris Johnson first as the Trade Minister and then as Foreign Secretary, returned the favour by supporting Johnson when he was caught in the web of scandals and stood by him until his final weeks in office. Now she is gearing up to take his place at number 10 Downing Street. Among her much publicised plans to fix the country's economy is cutting taxes and decreasing the burden on Britons, which has been widely welcomed by members of the Conservative Party. Tim Bale, a professor of politics at Queen Mary, University of London, is a close observer of the Conservative Party. He told CNN, "The average age of a party member is the late 50s. Just under half are of pensionable age, and they are predominantly white." Tim Bale added, "They mostly live in southern England and are financially comfortable. They support a strong line of law and order. They approve of low taxes." Given the cost of living crisis, the main challenge for people has been increasing taxes and sharp hikes in prices, which Liz Truss has promised to take up as the first priority of her premiership. While she believes that cutting taxes would give a flip to the economy, Rishi Sunak calls it fantasy economics by Truss, given the UK is still recovering from the economic shock of the COVID-19 pandemic. Both candidates are trying to appeal to the Conservative Party base at a time when the British economy is stagnant and has caused Britons to struggle with skyrocketing inflation and a cost-of-living crisis. Recently, Labour's Shadow Chancellor Rachel Reeves was at pains to explain that the British government has lost control of the economy, adding that as families and pensioners worry about how they're going to pay their bills, the Tory leadership candidates are touring the country announcing unworkable policies that will do nothing to help people get through this crisis. The eventual winner will face the challenge of reviving Britain's economy. Weaker trade after Brexit, coronavirus pandemic, high energy prices following Russia's special operation in Ukraine, and a series of scandals under Boris Johnson's watch have all damaged the Conservative Party. The fears among leading Conservative members are growing over the fact that regardless of which candidate wins, the Conservative Party will end up being the main loser, given all the accusations that are being exchanged between the rivals to destroy one another. The last two candidates in the race will be trying to convince party members to back them at hustings events around the country until 31st of August. The party members, whose number reaches about 200,000, will give a postal vote then. The ballot will close on 2nd of September, with the winner due to be announced on 5th of September. While on the domestic front, the two prime minister hopefuls have contrasting stances, they appear to be on the same page on the country's foreign policy, especially the policy towards West Asia. According to parliamentary voting data, their views on issues affecting the region appear largely similar. Following Boris Johnson's deep footprint on most of the foreign policy matters, a Sunak government would mean a continuation of the same policy, supporting Western intervention in Syria and Iraq, continuing arms exports to Saudi Arabia, opposing Iran's peaceful nuclear program, supporting the Israeli regime's clandestine nuclear activities and destabilization plots in the region. Rishi Sunak's priorities are likely to be heavily domestic and suggest the continuation of the status quo. Liz Truss's prospective administration seems to have a clearer foreign policy approach in contrast to Rishi Sunak's, in line with their record in the cabinet. It will be interesting to see her stance on the restoration of the 2015 nuclear deal. As a top diplomat, she spoke of getting Iran back to the negotiating table, even though Iran never left the table in the first place. Britain's role in the Vienna talks as a member of the European Troika has been duplicitous. She is also expected to aggressively take up the cases of British nationals jailed in Iran for espionage. Regarding her policy towards the Arabian periphery states of the Persian Gulf, she is likely to strengthen ties with Arab states and promote her notion of a liberty network of the countries in the Persian Gulf Cooperation Council, the PGCC. Regardless of who takes the pole position, the next Prime Minister of Britain would have to focus more on domestic crises rather than poking their nose into other countries.
Sheikh Baqir Sharif Al-Qarashi decides to compile...
So we can consider Sayyid Hadi Khosrow Shahi...
Shahid Muhammad Baqir al-Sadr. He was born in Kadhimiyya.
The first and the most important thing that we can learn from Allama Tabatabai is his great effort...
In this regard, I should like to say that one of the great benefits of the late Ayatollah Sayyid Mahmoud Shahrudi was...
When we look at the works of late Rawzati, we see...
There is a famous sentence from Mirza Khalil Qamari that he says in Farsi, Tuhid kalame baraye kalame tuhid.
Be more familiar with outstanding Shia figures in the teacher.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Assalamu alaikum to you, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. Very welcome to another episode of the program The Teacher, an introduction to the lives and works of the most outstanding Muslim Shia dignitaries, scholars, and ulama. I'm Atta, the host of this program. With me in the studio for today's discussion are two guest speakers from the Islamic House of Qom, Sheikh Mahdavi and Dr. Muhammad Reza Fakhrani. Dr. Fakhrani, assalamu alaikum. Welcome to the show.
Assalamu alaikum.
And Sheikh Mahdavi, assalamu alaikum, brother.
Alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah.
Okay, I would like to express my condolences on the arrival of the month of Muharram and the martyrdom anniversary of Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam on the day of Ashura and his faithful companions. For today's discussion, we want to talk about a scholar, a faqih of the 14th century Hijra, named Mirza Abul Fazl Tehrani, but he is mostly known by his magnum opus, Shafa al-Sudur fi Sharh Ziyarat al-Ashur. Sheikh Mahdavi, let's start with you, brother. Give us some information about the biography and the early life of the late Ayatollah Mirza Abul Fazl Tehrani.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Mirza Abul Fazl Nuri Tehrani, or sometimes it is given the title Mirza Abul Fazl Mujtahid Kalantar,
yes,
is one of the great scholars who was born in 1273 in Tehran. And he, as it is said in some of the records, he finished his study in Tehran and reached the level of ijtihad by the way he wanted to experience the atmosphere of Najaf and also Samarra. So he moved to Najaf, benefited from the asatid over there, and also he moved to Samarra and benefited from the great scholar and the founder of the seminary of Samarra, Mirzaye Shirazi. Yes. Then he comes back to Tehran and stays in Tehran and start his activity in terms of preaching the religion, tablighi activity, and also besides doing all these tablighi activity, we see that how he was holding the scientific or ilmi gathering with his students.
Yes.
That shows his level of ijtihad and knowledge in field of religious studies.
That's right.
Also, this is good for our audience if they want to locate the history and know where he was living.
Yes.
It's good to know that he is considered or he is regarded as the grandfather of the wife of Imam Khomeini, rahmatullah alayh.
Yes.
Meaning that his son is the father of marhum Khadija Saqafi.
Yes.
The wife of Imam Khomeini, rahmatullah alayh. And that's why we have some recommendation from Imam Khomeini, rahmatullah alayh, in terms of his knowledge and his ijtihad as well.
That's all right. Also, he was a poet.
Yes.
On Ahlul Bayt. And what is important is his sharp memory. They say that he had so many of abiyats and the verses of the poems in his mind, and he knew them by heart. And this was one of his most outstanding talents. Dr. Fakhr Rouhani, the late Shaykh Mirza Abul Fazl Tehrani, is known by Shafa al-Sudur fi Sharh Ziyarat al-Ashur. And you as a researcher on the Ashura literature, we can say, and the Ashura history and Karbala history, had some, fruitful studies on this book. Share some of your good experiences on this book and what was the main intention of Mirza Abul Fazl Tehrani to compose such a book.
Yes, Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Sallallahu alayki wa abdullah. Assalamu alayki wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Regarding this book, it must be indicated that although more than 100 years passed from the time when this magnum opus of the late Mirza Abul Fazl Saqafi Tehrani was published first in Bombay in British India, and then later on it received other editions, mainly Iranian editions, it must be indicated that this book is still one of the noblest expositions and exegesis of the famous Ziyarat Ashura. The whole book was written, at the request of some Iranian merchants who were in Bombay, and they needed an authentic explanation and exposition, in fact, elucidation of the famous Ziyarat Ashura.
Yes.
The Iranian merchants in Bombay addressed the letter to the late Mirza Shirazi in Samarra. And then Mirza Shirazi in Samarra asked Mirza Abul Fazl Saqafi Tehrani to develop such a book. And it was one of the main reasons for his emigration from Tehran to Samarra and then to Najaf.
Okay. So upon the request of Mirza Shirazi.
Yes, he did this.
Mirza Abul Fazl Tehrani.
Yes, and it shows that he was an outstanding scholar. He was such a scholar that Mirza Shirazi relied on his explanations. Structurally speaking, the book has two or three main sections. The first section is concerned with the chains of hadith relators and transmitters who related and quoted Ziyarat Ashura one by one.
Okay.
He moved back from his own time, back to the time of the infallible Imams Muhammad al-Baqir al-Islam and Ja'far al-Sadiq al-Islam.
Good.
And based on this authentic chain of hadith transmitters and authorities, he proves that there's no doubt on the authenticity of Ziyarat Ashura.
And we know that originally this Ziyarat, say, gets back to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, isn't it?
Exactly.
The wording.
Exactly. Yes. Okay. Yes. No, I'm going to explain
it.
And then in the second aspect, in the second chapter, he talks about the views of Allama Majlisi as pertaining to Ziyarat Ashura.
Very good.
The second part of the book, which is which makes it the greater space of the book, it's about his own translation, Persian translation of Ziyarat Ashura, coupled with and supported by very important details. For example, when he comes to talk about the opponents of Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam, he gives a detailed genealogy of the opponents of Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam from the time of Jahiliyyah down to the time of Ashura. And next to this, we find that finally he deals with Du'a Safwan or Du'a Al-Ghameh. Because this is a prayer, a supplementary prayer taught to Safwan. And Safwan was a close companion of Imam al-Sadiq alayhi salam. It must be indicated that according to other varieties or according to other views, the Safwan or Al-Ghameh prayer is another kind of Ashura Ziyarat text, because according to some researchers, one cannot say there's only one Ziyarat Ashura or Ashura oriented Ziyarat text.
Okay.
There may be at least five or six Ziyarat texts that
are
recommended.
You mean different variations?
No. There are five or six various Ziyarat texts recommended to be recited on the day of Ashura.
The
most famous of all of them is exactly this one.
That's right.
According to recent researches already done, it's proved that explained in the book Ziyarat Ashura cannot be nullified or cannot be rejected, with much ease. Rather, it shows that the late Mirza Abul Fazl Saghafi Tehrani was a great scholar. Of course, he authored many other books, but this book of his is the most conspicuous and outstanding work of his that has survived, and it helped his name survive throughout the Shia history.
Again, this is a Farsi, we can't say, isn't
it?
Books on Ziyarat al-Ashura, but literally speaking, it is very much, of high status in Persian language.
IRIB English Radio. Our website is parstoday.com.
You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir. La ilaha illallah. La ilaha illallah.
Sheikh Mahtavi, what about you, brother? Can you give us some other information about Shafa al-Sudur fi Sharh Ziyarat al-Ashura?
As dear doctor mentioned, one of the chapter of Shafa al-Sudur is talking about the authenticity of the chain of transmitters. I think this is good for our listeners to know how the chain of the transmitters of Ziyarat al-Ashura, or to which date it will date it back. The first or oldest manuscript that we have in which Ziyarat al-Ashura has been mentioned is Kamil al-Ziyarat ibn Qulaway, who died 386. Okay. It's almost 50 years after the finishing or ending the minor occultation. So it's really close to the time of the presence of the Ma'sum. As we see in the book Shafa al-Sudur, he mainly benefited from two main books. One is Kamil al-Ziyara and the other is Misbah al-Mutahajjid le-Sheikh Tusi, who also died during the 5th century, mainly in 460. So both manuscript, the oldest manuscript that Mirzai Tehrani has benefited from, are really close to the presence of the Ma'sum. So then the other chapters in which he's talking could be regarded as a kind of encyclopedia regarding the Ziyarat al-Ashura. Because the same as the other scholars who started commenting on Ziyarat al-Ashura, which is in the 8th century, the first commentary has been written, we see that some of the scholars would take only one part from Ziyarat al-Ashura. For example, Al-Lazina Taba'at, this part. In شفاء الصدور في شرح زيارة الآشور, as I mentioned, it's kind of encyclopedia, not only regarding the explanation for all parts of the زيارة الآشورة, it also collect the narrators, the transmitters, merits of these, and the thawab and reward that those who are reciting the ziyara will be given. So whatever which is related to ziyarat Ashura, you can find it in this ziyara.
That's all right. Especially out of the borders of the Shiite world, we can say there are so many questions and ambiguities and sometimes misunderstandings regarding Ziyarat al-Ashura of Imam al-Husayn alayhi salam. So this book, I think, is a nice reference. But is it translated into English, Shafa al-Sudur?
Not yet.
Not yet? What about the Arabic language?
It hasn't got any Arabic version, but one of my friends has produced an English explanation and English exegesis of Ziyarat al-Ashura. Originally in English, but mainly based on Mirza Ofaz Saghavi Tehrani's book Shifa al-Sudur.
And is it simple to read to for the Persian speakers?
No, not that much.
Okay.
Because, I mean, it's a kind of literary language. Yes.
So all in all, what do you think the main use of this book would be? I mean, the main benefit of this book for the people, or for the scholars, maybe?
Yes, I mean, for scholars, I mean, because I mean, it takes meticulous scholars to historical nooks and corners regarding how and what way this Ziyarat al-Ashura has been transmitted from the time of its first appearance in the Shia world. And for common people, because of the rich historical explanation that Mirza Wafas Tehrani gives on the characteristics of the ancestors of Imam al-Hussein's foes and enemies, it sheds much light on certain, darker aspects of Jahiliyya and the ancestors of Imam al-Hussein's foes and enemies. It proves that they were genetically corrupt.
That's right.
Yes.
You mean the
opponents of Imam al-Hussein.
The enmity that started from the time of Imam Ali alayhi salam.
Yes.
And before that, the time continued.
It goes back to the time of Jahiliyyah.
That's all right. Thank you very much, Dr. Fakhrohani and Sheikh Mahdavi, for your presence in the program. The teacher talking about Mirza Abul Fazl Tehrani and his magnum opus, Shifa al-Sudur fi Sharh Ziyarat al-Ashur. Hope that the dear listeners, especially in English language, who were not familiar with this man and his work, benefited from this program. Safar 8th, 1316. According to a lunar Hijri calendar, this outstanding man passed away in the city of Tehran. His body was taken to the holy shrine of Hazrat Abdul Azim in Shahr al-Ray, and he was buried by the grave of his father in the same chamber that Abul Futuh al-Razi is buried in Shahr al-Ray. May Allah bless the soul of Mirza Abul Fazl Tehrani, the author of Shifa al-Sudur fi Sharh Ziyarat al-Ashur. And thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to us. We hope you enjoyed this episode of the program, The Teacher. For more information, visit our website at parstoday.com/Ian Khalaf Islam page and listen to our special programs on the month of Muharram about Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam. To another episode, God bless you all. Fi amanillah. Assalamu alaikum, ya Abu Abdullah al-Hussein.
This is the Heart of Life pounding. IRIB English Radio. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.